This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey, everybody. It's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell, his stupid diet coach, and Ryan Kennedy here to talk some hockey. Although, if you're a Montreal fan, I don't know if you want to talk hockey right now at all, because it's just been an absolute... I mean, tire fire is becoming an overused term because it's being applied to the Habs so much. But it's really fitting. Like it's bad. It is bad.
It is worse than we anticipated. I didn't think they were going to be great this year, but I thought that with Carey Price in net and the softness of the Atlantic Division, they'd at least be
Come on, guys. They're outscoring Nikita Kucherov.
Yes.
Are they? No, they're not.
Yeah, they are. Well, they've got 13 goals and Nikita Kucherov has 10.
He's got 10.
Yeah, so they're outscoring
Kucherov has 16 points.
They're outscoring Nikita Kucherov right now. So let's not talk about the sky falling here.
Yeah.
Okay? Wow. I'm not even sure that if you said to a Canadiens fan or someone affiliated with the Canadiens, what's the absolute worst case scenario for this season? What's like the absolute, like if Murphy's Law was applied and everything went wrong, and this team just tanked out this year, what's the absolute worst case scenario? I don't even think they would think it would be as bad as it's been.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here's a perfect example
can't
of
store,
that.
Can't score, can't stop shots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here's the perfect example of that. No matter how you felt about the trade at the time, if you were to say that Mikhail Sergachev would be outscoring Jonathan Drouin,
yikes.
People are like, nah, that's silly.
Yeah.
But that is the reality that we are in right now. Carl Alzner is their second leading scorer right now.
Holy crap.
He hasn't scored a goal, but he has 4 assists.
Jeez. And it's weird because I've tried to be optimistic about Montreal. I wrote about it last week because if you looked at the underlying numbers, they actually were the least lucky team in hockey. So they were last in PDO, last in save percentage, last in shooting percentage. But at some point, the pucks have to start going in. And
shooting percentage
is also tied to team skill.
Yes.
So it's going to regress to the mean a little bit. The percentage is going to come up. But even if Montreal was scoring on, they're scoring on, I think, 3% of their shots.
I think it's four now. Yeah,
if they were scoring on 7% of their shots, which would be a low number, they would still be way behind the rest of the
league.
Well,
what's the league average? Like 9, 10? 9 or something?
I think 8
okay,
or something.
Okay, so anyways,
like that.
You pointy-headed guys always say.
like,
yeah. Yeah, you pointy-headed
guys.
You pointy-headed guys always come up with this stuff about how they're going to progress to the mean and all this horseshit. Right?
Regress. The term is regress?
No, they're going to progress.
No, you don't. See, sorry, everybody. Ken doesn't understand.
How can they not progress to the
regress
mean?
Regress doesn't mean negative. It means go back.
Okay. Well, thank you. Anyway, so they're going to...
The more you know.
What, they're going to do whatever it is that they're going to do, right?
They're going to get to the mean.
So I guess that's one thing you have to hang on to, because I was looking... Montreal Canadiens lead the league in shots by like a pretty comfortable margin, and they... They're like 31st in goals by a big margin. So you would have to think that if you pointy headed guys are to be believed, that's going to change at some point, right?
And is that what you believe?
I believe their shooters are bad.
That's the big question.
I know Max Pacioretty is going to score.
Sure he is.
Yeah, but as a group, I just think their shooters are bad, and they also don't get themselves into good positions
because they don't have the size, and they're so weak down the middle that their
best opportunity for a center is a winger.
They just shouldn't let Dwight King go, you guys. They need that size.
You know what I thought was like a horrible omen? Like, your team is bad.
You shouldn't let Sven Andrighetto go.
That's the big one, yeah.
Andreas Martinsson.
Yeah, but it's always a bad sign when a player you brought in, his next destination is not the NHL. Like, they were like, we need Dwight King, and Dwight King's not in the NHL. We need Steve Ott. Steve Ott no longer plays hockey.
He's a coach.
He is now a coach. He's a great guy on the bench, but he's wearing a suit.
I was talking about this with somebody, and it's funny because the Toronto Maple Leafs have become the Montreal Canadiens. And the Montreal Canadiens have become the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, man.
Well, and here's the thing. So a lot of what we're talking about has to do with personnel. And, I mean, who's making the personnel decisions? It's Marc Bergevin. And
the natural question to ask is who is going to get fired and whose head's going to roll. And to me, it's more logically Bergevin because, I mean, Claude Julien hasn't really gotten a chance. I know it's a second chance, but, you know, this incarnation of his hiring because he was a midseason hire. So I presume that if someone has to go, it's going to be Bergevin. But a midseason coach firing or midseason GM firing is pretty rare. So do you think he's going to hold on to his job all season?
I think he will. I get the sense that they're not going to make any big panic moves here. That they're probably going to. Oh my gosh, I have to sneeze. Okay. I think it's passed. I think it's probably going to stay status quo for this season. But I don't know if you guys noticed last week there was a story in one of the French dailies in Montreal, and the columnist spoke with Patrick Roy. Mm-hmm. And Patrick Roy was saying, yeah, well, you know, if the opportunity was right, I'd come back. But it was very cryptic. And he said, you know, I probably don't want to coach anymore. I'd probably be more inclined to go to a management position.
Wow.
And I just thought, ooh, that's interesting timing for Patrick Roy to come out and say something like that.
Possibly close to home.
Where one of the requirements is you have to be able to communicate in the language of the fans, which I believe isn't out of line. I think the GM of the Montreal Canadiens has to be able to speak French. He has to be able to communicate with the vast majority of that fan base. I don't think that that's a situation where you can say, oh, yeah, well, they should just pick anybody. No, I think you have to pick someone who's a Francophone for that job or someone who has the capacity to say yes and not like in a sac ou coivu kind of way. Yeah, I'm going to learn French. No, I'm going to learn French.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So,
like Ken Dryden. Ken Dryden.
Yeah, or, you know, Bob Gainey did it. Bob Gainey did it, that very thing. I get the sense that they're going to ride this out. They're not going to make any panic moves. And if this year is the tire fire that we all think it's going to be, if it keeps up this way, and I don't think it is. Like, really, are they really going to shoot at 4%? And is Carey Price really going to be this subpar for the entire season? Somebody mentioned that, you know, if the Canadians had got off to a pretty good start and, you know, we're flirting with first place right now, you know, they play a couple months and then this dip comes in the middle of January, you know, you're probably thinking, okay, it's going to correct itself. Mm-hmm. So I would suspect that they're not that good, but they're not this bad.
Mm-hmm. I would fire Marc Bergevin before he trades Victor Mete for Mark Fain.
I think
it's funny because it could happen.
Maybe they toss in a third round or two. No, there's just so much damage is being done. Like, every move is blowing up in their faces. And when you're under pressure, which you should be because they're losing, you're only looking for your own, you know, job. You're only looking out for your own job. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, this, you know, the franchise isn't dire straits right now. Like, they had a good draft. You know, I think Ryan Poehling is a good chip for the future, but, you know, he's at least a couple of years away, and that's fine. But, I mean, Sergachev is the perfect example. If they had any sort of patience whatsoever, he could have been in their top six, even their top four right now.
Yeah, but I don't know. See, but that's the thing. I don't know that it was a lack of patience. I think they knew Sergachev was going to be good, just like, you know, Dallas knew Jerome Iginla was going to be really good when they traded him for Joe Nieuwendyk.
Right.
They knew Sergachev was going to be good. Where the organization falls down in that whole trade is the fact that they had to use Sergachev to fill, to plug the dike in another area where they had been woeful and had not addressed that need.
But they
still needed a number one center. They needed an offensive player. So they had to give up a guy like Sergachev, who they knew was going to be good.
Yeah.
They didn't know how good, and they probably didn't think this good this quickly. Mm.
I don't fault them for that. I think it was a team needs trade. I mean, Montreal's a win-now team. They did have at the time, you know, they had Shea Weber and Jeff Petrie, and they signed Carl Alsner. I mean, it's not the most mobile defense corps, but it's a veteran win-now defense corps, and they were trying to address their greatest needs. So,
but the problem is they didn't address their need because they needed a big number one center, and what they got was a top-line winger.
Who's being shoehorned into center
because they have nobody else. Mm-hmm. It's not Drouin's fault. He's being miscast. He's not a face-off ace. You know, he's not big. And that's what they needed.
See, to me, if you fire Mark Bergevin right now, okay, it's not with the intention of bringing someone in who's going to clean up this mess right away mm-hmm. and improve this team and everything. No, because the mess has been made.
Yes.
And this is going to be a long-term fix. It's not yes. going to be something where someone's going to be able to come in and turn this team around and make them a contender this year if they're not. Mm-hmm. That's not why you fire Mark Bergevin. You fire Mark Bergevin because you just need to reset.
Yes.
You just need a reset. You need a new face in there. You need someone you can put in front of this fan base and say, I'm going to try and fix this. It's going to take a while. Someone who has some credibility or whatever. But you don't do it thinking that you're going to bring someone in who's going to, you know, move a few pieces around here and there.
For sure.
And then they're going to become a Stanley Cup contender if they're not.
Yeah. It's funny. And I wonder what Carey Price would have to say about that, having just signed that huge contract. I wonder how he feels.
I've made a huge mistake.
Yeah, I wonder.
Yeah, but this is on Carey Price, too.
You mean what's happened so far?
Yeah, this is on him, too.
I mean the long-term plan. I mean, if Montreal has to blow it up and start rebuilding, then in that situation, Price is kind of...
Yeah, at least Carey Price can say to himself, I can be better. Can the guys in front of me be better?
Yeah, but he could have said that when he signed. And he knew the answer. He knew the answer when he signed, that this team wasn't very good, or he should have known.
Mm.
As they say in the legal community, he knew or he should have known. And he should have known that this was a team that had very, very, very serious flaws. Mm-hmm. And if he didn't know that, then he wasn't I don't know what he was seeing from the crease when he was watching games.
Right. He was like, this team is Carey Price, they'll be fine. wait, I am Carey Price.
Sticking in the Atlantic Division and sticking with teams that are just a mess right now. Let's stay on the negative train.
It's a fun train.
We're going to drive it across the border to Buffalo. They have the new coach, Bill Housley. They have the new GM, Jason Botterill. And yet, the result on the ice is still pitiful. And Ken, you were in Buffalo this past weekend to watch them play Vancouver. And I know it was ugly. What the hell is wrong with Buffalo? And shouldn't we be seeing some marginal improvement from this team right now?
Well, let's insert the caveat that they beat Boston in overtime on Friday or Saturday. They were down 4-1, came back, scored some goals. Maybe that's a one of these statement turnaround games for them. Maybe it's not. I don't know. But the team I watched on Friday night on home ice against Vancouver, got absolutely dummied by a team whose leading scorer is Derek Dorsett.
Poor Derek Dorsett. The mere mention of his name makes us laugh. Sorry, Derek.
He's got 5 goals, eh?
Six.
There you go.
Holy smokes!
You can only hope to contain Derek Dorsett.
Right, exactly.
You can't stop
it. But to me, and I was talking to some people about it, it was you were looking for Phil Housley to come in, and I don't know if this is on Phil Housley or if it's on the personnel. I honestly don't know. But you look for Phil Housley to come in and shore things up and for a team to play well fundamentally, even if they're not a very good team, which they're not, right? I mean, they on Friday night, I'm not sure what the power play penalty kill sort of stuff was Saturday. As of Friday night, their power play was being outscored 6-5 this season.
Wow. Mm. Wow. On shorties.
Yeah. Woo! 6 shorties and 5 power play goals.
Wow.
And they looked like a mess. Fundamentally, positionally, it was like I was watching with another guy that writes, and we were just like, really? They're really they are a mess on the ice, or they were in that game, and they have been most of the year. And so, does that come down to Phil Housley? Phil Housley was a very good assistant in Nashville. He did a great job with the World Junior team, but the fact of the matter is he's never coached and he's never been a head coach for a sustained period of time for any team, for any sort of American League team or anything like that. So now he's coming in and he's coaching against, Guy Boucher. He's coaching against Mike Babcock. He's coaching against, Claude Julien. These guys are
experienced guys.
And I wonder, I do wonder if he's not a little in over his head right now that, that maybe the next logical step would have been for him to take over his own bench in the American League, you know, prove it, you know, earn his chops there for a couple of years, and then make the move to the NHL.
Interesting.
I'm willing to give Housley a little more rope. And I look at the Columbus Blue Jackets, where when John Tortorella took over halfway through the season, it didn't really push the needle much for them. But once he got his training camp in the next summer, the Blue Jackets were off and running, and they were a great cohesive unit. They were obviously well-conditioned. And I think Housley needs a little more time. And, you know, he did have a training camp with the Sabres, but they're banged up. You know, Zach Bogosian's hurt. Alex Nylander was hurt before training camp even started. And I'm not sure if he would have even sniffed the NHL team because he wasn't exactly setting the AHL on fire last year. But, you know, he didn't have everybody assembled, and it is early. And perhaps it's a matter of this is a year where that structure is implemented. The players need to learn what the Phil Housley way is right now. And there's a lot to do in Buffalo. I actually blogged on this today or Monday, depending on when you're listening to this. They need to certainly build up, and, you know, the Jack Eichel line is great. I'm thinking they should definitely re-sign Evander Kane at this point. You know, the Ryan O'Reilly line is getting better, and O'Reilly's playing better, but they have a lot of passengers otherwise. And I'm even wondering, like, do you hang on to Sam Reinhart at this point? Or do you see what you can get for him? Maybe he needs a change of scenery just as much as the Sabres do, and maybe you can get some sort of complimentary asset for him. The defense needs more help. Rasmus Ristolainen cannot play 27 minutes a night. Like, in an ideal world, he is getting all your power play minutes and very little of your shorthanded minutes, and he's maybe playing like 21, 22 minutes. Now, right now, they don't have the guys to fill that spot, but maybe the future holds Brendan Goulet. Maybe they get Rasmus Dahlin, and most of their problems are solved because all of a sudden, you know, a top four that has...
Well, we know Montreal's getting them, though.
Yeah, that's a good one. Jeez. Adam Boqvist, then. Yeah, I, you know, there's work to do, but I would like to at least see Housley get a couple of years to implement what he can. Because the Nashville defense, you know, they were one of the most talented units in the league, but they also clicked very well.
What I wonder, I'm glad you mentioned Ristolainen, because I'm wondering if there's a problem with the way Buffalo structured its franchise, because what if your pillar, Ristolainen, is actually made of paper and not stone? And what I mean is, you draft Ristolainen, you groom him, he's supposed to become Victor Hedman, you give him Victor Hedman ice time and responsibility, as you said, Ryan, but if you look at the analytics, you know, I don't know how many more chances we can give Ristolainen before we have to declare him just not that good. And they've just invested so much in him. And if he isn't that number one defenseman, which, I mean, 2 years ago, I think we all would have said, oh, yeah, he's going to be their Clydesdale workhorse. And if he isn't, then what do you have on that blue line? You don't have very much at all. And in which case, Buffalo's in big trouble, even in the long term.
But to Ryan's point, the guy has not been set up to succeed. He's been set up to fail. Bad team, too many minutes, too much responsibility as a young player. Like, you don't know what you have in the guy because... you haven't put him in any position to be able to show what he can do, you know? So I mean, defensemen take a little longer, and I would suspect that would be the case for, you know, this guy. But I mean, I'd like to see him playing in a situation where at the very least he has a fighting chance to, you know, to be an effective player.
Yeah. And like I said, like, he's leading them in shorthanded time on ice. That shouldn't happen right now. Like, clearly that's not where you're going. It was the same situation last year. They had one of the worst penalty kills in the league. It was at least bottom 10. I can't remember the exact number.
They're killing their own penalties now. Great.
Yeah.
Six shorties.
Can we defer? I just think if you need somebody to take those minutes, and that's the problem, is like, okay, well, if Ristolainen's not killing those penalties, who is? And that's the problem they have right now. Maybe it's tough. Like, I don't see an immediate solution because the only team that wants to trade defensemen is Vegas, and you don't want those defensemen. So, like, unless it was, you know, like, you bring Clayton Stoner in and he just kills penalties and takes, like, third pairing minutes, then maybe that's a fail safe, but I don't know.
Yeah. To switch gears and be a little happier, but we're going to stick in the Atlantic Division, just the way the cookie's crumbling today. The Atlantic's on our mind. Tampa Bay is just clowning the league right now, and especially Nikita Kucherov and Steven Stamkos, who are sitting atop the scoring race. Stamkos with 2 points per game so far, which is crazy, yeah. Do you guys think, is any team better than Tampa Bay right now, or are they kind of settling in now as the alpha dog? To me, I think that's going to be the case. I mean, we liked them at the start of the year. I mean, we liked them last year to win the cup as well. It certainly looks like they're here to stay as a dominant team, especially because Andrei Vasilevskiy is looking Vezina caliber good so far.
Right.
And he's still young. It's not like it's a fluke, because he was the best goalie prospect in the world for a couple of years before, let's say, Ilya Samsonov came along. So he's sort of doing what he was always supposed to do. I don't know. I don't think there's a better team in the East, at the very least, than Tampa Bay right now.
No, there's not. And if you buy the notion that the power balance is shifting to the East in the NHL, then you would have to say that the Tampa Bay Lightning are the best team in the NHL. And I mean, they're healthy, which they weren't last year. And I think the biggest thing is like, I'm not surprised that they've come out like this. I'm really not, because I think last year what they kept doing was, yeah, we're hurt, but we're still pretty good and we'll get it together and you know, it'll be fine. And, you know, and I just don't think there was that urgency there. And then the next thing you know, holy crap,
we're out of the playoffs.
We're out of the playoffs. Yeah, yeah. How did that happen?
Like, look how far Nashville went if we had just gotten in.
They were obviously, you know, hugely affected by injuries last year, but they shouldn't have been a non-playoff team. And I think this year, I think that basically the law was laid down by Steve Yzerman and John Cooper. Okay, guys, we mean business right from the get-go. And there's a sense of urgency here, and we have to show what we're capable of doing, because a repeat of last year is not going to be acceptable here. And I think that's a big part of the reason why they're doing so well.
Yeah, this might actually be a rare scenario where winning the President's Trophy means something. And I think when you look at this lineup, they have all the elements. They have a number one center, they have a number one defenseman, they have an excellent goaltender, and from there they have incredible depth. Like, Tyler Johnson's on their third line because Braden Point has been playing so well. Mm-hmm. So you have three scoring lines. You have Stamkos going from a sniper to a premier playmaker for Kucherov.
Kucherov now has Marty St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has Marty St. Louis in the form of Steven Stamkos.
Yeah.
Who would have thought that, like, Stamkos, 2 weeks into the season, would be leading the league with 16 points.
18 points in nine games.
18 points, three of them goals.
Yeah.
And what do you do if you're an opposing defense corps? It's like, okay, well, we're going to key in on Kucherov because he's the hot stick right now. It's like, well, I guess we'll have to give a little slack for the former Rocket Richard Trophy winner. Yeah,
60-goal man.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, is like, Stamkos could still score, but you're getting so many matchup problems with that squad. And you look at the defense corps, there's probably like a little more room for depth there, but they have so many assets that they could make a trade at the deadline to beef up. But as you have it now, Jake Doshin is still playing with Victor Hedman. That's a tremendous advantage for Tampa Bay, that they can spread out all their defense corps and still have success. So I think they're off to the races right now, and as long as they stay healthy, like, I'm not really sure who could stop them.
Mm-hmm. That's fair. To switch gears and leagues for a moment, a really cool story coming out of the Southern Professional Hockey League. They announced an awesome new playoff format in which the top seeds get to pick their own opponents, which I absolutely love, and they televise these pick parties. And I managed to get a hold of the president of the league, Jim Combs, and he gave quite a fun interview. So here it is. Have a listen.
Can you take me back to when the idea was formed? I heard it was you were having dinner with Axel Bammer, and is he the commissioner of the German league? Is it the German ice hockey league?
So he's the COO of the Austrian league.
Oh, the Austrian league. Okay.
Yeah, and we were having dinner in Las Vegas at the ECHL meeting, and so, you know, I just wanted to kind of get to know them. What do they do? And like any good business, we do a lot of R&D, which is rip off and duplicate, and just do the same thing that they're doing. And so when Axel was talking, he kept saying, well, this team is going for the pick spot. This team's going for the pick spot. This team's going for the pick spot. And I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about right now.
What's a pick
spot? What are you saying? Like, what are you even saying? Yeah. And he goes, well, and he described the playoff system. And when he explained it to me, I almost fell off the chair. I said, this is the greatest thing ever. And I go, we're going to do this. And he goes, oh, we'd love somebody in North America to do it. I go, all right. So then I went back and, you know, the next day I emailed him to tell me exactly how this works. And, you know, he described it as it is, right? So, you know, one has a pick of 5 through 8, and then, you know, 2 picks what's left, and 3 picks what's left, and 4 gets whatever 5, mm-hmm. you know, or 4 gets whatever's left over. And they televise it nationally in Austria. For us, we're going to televise it in our markets, but it'll be on the web casting as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, anybody that wants to tune in can tune in. And, you know, the team will be given 10 minutes. The number one team, they'll be able to pick. And then the next team will be given 10 minutes to decide who they want. They'll make their pick. Then so on and so on.
Excellent. And I mean, I think I know the reason why you're kind of preaching to the choir, because I love the idea too. But just for our readers, what was it exactly about the idea that you loved specifically?
The competitiveness and the excitement that it would bring. If one has to pick who they think they can beat, and no matter who they pick, you're creating a rivalry, and you're creating a little more hostility. The players are going to be playing harder. Not that they don't play hard now, because they all do. But we all know that once somebody challenges us and says that we're the weakest link, you know, or, you know, if number one picks my team and I'm the weakest link, well, you know what, I'm practicing harder this week. I'm practicing longer this week. I'm going to be even more competitive, because there's nothing that's going to be better than having the underdog win. And, you know, I just thought of it as something that is really going to take the competitiveness of what is already very competitive up another notch.
I see. And it's interesting.
And it's going to bring the fans together, too. You know, the fans, you know, I use the NHL markets, but, you know, as examples. But if you're in New York and you're the Rangers and you're the number one team and you say, we're picking Philly, even if Philly's 8, doesn't matter where they are, even if they're at the bottom rung. If you say, we're picking Philly because we're going to take Philly out, now both cities are energized. Because one of them says, excuse me, you think you can beat us? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Right?
For sure, yeah. And it's interesting because I'm kind of, like, in my mind it's going to work, so I'm already thinking a couple years down the road. Do you think you could you see teams using it as a strategy? So, for example, you know, there's a team that you don't think is the weakest link, but you want to get in their head. Because you know you're going to play them. Let's say it's a team, you know you're going to face them eventually. Maybe it's a team you're going to have to play in the final. But you pick them in round one just to mess with them and make them, you know, get in their head psychologically by making them think they're the weakest link. Could you see anything like that happening down the road?
Yeah, and that's where, you know, Axel was kind of going over some of the things where they go, you know, sometimes they pick it because of travel, right? Hey, I can play the team 3 hours away versus playing the team 16 hours away. Because, but sometimes the guys want to take on the toughest opponent, whichever one they think is the toughest, because once they get by them, it's an easier road to the finals and to the championship.
Right.
So that side of the strategy could also work as well. Like, hey, this team, you know, is a team that to beat. Let's go beat them, and then we'll have an easier target down the road.
I see. Yeah, and it's almost like if there's a pretty good team that has a star player who's injured for maybe only a week, you get them in round one instead of getting them later when their star's back or something like that.
Yeah. If somebody's hurt or somebody's playing hard. So, like, you don't always want to play the last place team, i.e. Los Angeles Kings, play their butt off the last week of the season and make it into the playoffs. And, of course, they saw through everybody and won the championship. Mm-hmm. But, you know, hey, if you're the number one team and you see this team playing so well the last 2 weeks, because they were in, for our league, they were in 10th spot, and now they played really well the last 2 weeks, now they're in the 8th spot, you may not want to touch them.
Yeah.
But the team that was in second place 2 weeks ago just lost 6 games, or just lost 5 games, their goalie's hurt, their 2 players got called up, hey, I might want to take number 5 because number 8 right now is peaking. We want to
good point. Yeah, very good point. And in terms of the internal reaction, from what I've heard, when you pitched it to the owners, there was no pushback, right? Was it pretty much unanimous? They all loved it?
Well, it took a little bit of sales, so I had to go through the whole process with them. But it kind of went from blank stares to their heads go down a little bit, and then all of a sudden the light catches on, and they put this big smile on their face, and they go, "This is going to be fantastic." And I said, "Exactly, because what we're going to do is have all 10 teams, you know, by January we'll start announcing the, you know, the when the pick is going to happen. So all the teams will have a party that last day of the season. They'll all set them up. They'll all have, you know, a party at the same time in every city in the league. They're all having a party. Now, two of the teams are obviously going to have their end-of-year party, and they can watch the pick party if they like. Everybody else is participating in the pick party. But it gives everybody in the league at the same time something, you know, to come together about. And, you know, we know when the pick's going to be. We know when it's going to happen. They can set it up in their sponsors, their, you know, whether it's in the arena, whether it's out at a restaurant, wherever they want to do the pick party, and have it all set up, and it'll be exciting for the whole league to do something all at the same time.
Excellent. That sounds fantastic. it really does. Sounds great. And I assume, what about the players? Have the players been all over it as well? I assume they're pretty pumped up about it.
They just found out a few days ago.
Wow.
The coaches, I assumed from the meeting that the owners would go tell the coaches, but they didn't even tell the coaches. I broke the news to the coaches probably 2 weeks ago. So, you know, we start a little bit later. Our opening night's tomorrow night. So, you know, the players are just now kind of getting together. They've been fighting for, you know, for positions on rosters right now. Mm-hmm. So I haven't spoken to any of them, but I have had four former players texting me going, "This is the greatest idea. Oh, I wish I could come back for one more year. You know, I definitely want to play now." And, you know, so it's gotten some negativity, some of the people that don't see it yet. But once you see it, and once it clicks in, you're like, oh, this is, you have to do this.
Excellent. And I'm sure you've been asked this one plenty of times, but because, you know, we do see the trend where leagues set, you know, they experiment with different ideas, and eventually they work their way up the pro ranks and they find their way to the NHL. And I know you guys were pretty ahead of the game in 3-on-3, if I remember correctly. So do you think that this idea is eventually going to float its way up to the NHL, or at least, you know, maybe the AHL or the ECHL?
Well, you know, I've sent it because I know all the league administrators, and you know, I know a lot of people with the National League office, and so it's around there. They're at least talking about it now, and I know some of the people in the competition committee that have seen it and sent me an email that said, "This is very interesting. We're going to be watching this year. You know, we're going to watch for sure." So, you know, things take time. You know, when we started 3-on-3 overtime, everybody laughed at us, like, you know, it's the most silliest thing ever, and now it's revolutionized the All-Star game, and there's no way you could take it out of the NHL, because it's a five-minute heart attack.
Oh, yeah,
but,
exactly. Well said.
You know, for me, I'm like the fan where I just get to sit and watch it, so it doesn't bother me, but the coaches and the players are like, "No, it's too much excitement," but it takes time, and you know, I could see this. A gentleman I was just talking to is about how much fun would the playoffs in golf be if they said, "All right, hey, you guys are the top 32, and instead of one plays 32 and two plays, blah blah blah, down the line, they got to say, 'All right, number one, you pick. You pick the bottom half, or NBA, you pick, or NFL. You know, hey, there's eight teams, and you know, how great would it be if the Patriots go, you know what, the weakest team are the Carolina Panthers, we'll take them.'" I mean, now you've created something completely different rather than, well, they're just seeded, now Carolina has to play New England. So it creates that one-on-one challenge.
For sure. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, thanks so much, Jim. I think that's everything I was curious about. I really appreciate it, and I know I'm sure your phone's going to keep blowing up, but I really love the insight.
Appreciate the interest in the SBHL.
For sure. We'll be watching very carefully when it comes time to make the picks.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, guys. I hope you enjoyed that. And to finish it off today, we're going to go to some reader questions. First one's from Bob Anderson. He says, after a somewhat slow start, will Connor McDavid win the scoring title? You know what? I'll talk first on this one. I'm going to say, despite the fact that Kucherov is playing amazingly well and Stamkos, I say yes. I think that McDavid can get so hot. Like keep in mind, with about, 3 weeks left in the season last year, he was tied with, like, Brad Marchand in points, and he won the scoring race by 11 points. And if you look at the analytics, like, the Oilers are getting a lot of shot attempts, especially McDavid. So I think he's going to go bananas, and I still think he finishes with 100-plus points and wins it.
I would tend to agree with you. Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that McDavid, you know, he had the big first game, obviously, with the hat trick. And I think everybody was like, okay, so he's going to have, what, 246 goals this year? I hate when people do that. and then you get, you know, like, seriously, 100 goals? Like, anybody really think Connor McDavid's ever going to score 100 goals in the NHL? Like, come on.
Then it was Jaromir Jagr that
said he's not going to do that. He's not going to do that. But he's certainly capable of taking a team on his shoulders. You know, we saw that amazing assist he had last week. And, I mean, this is a guy that I think, you know, once everything sort of falls into place, and again, another team that's not as bad as it's been playing lately, I think, I think that, you know, he's the best player in the world. Mm-hmm. He's the best player in the world right now. And I think he's going to show it.
My only caveat is Leon Draisaitl's injury. Mm-hmm. How long is he on the shelf? Because without Draisaitl, they've proven to be a one-line team, kind of a one-player team at this point, or at least a one-player offense. And if Draisaitl's out for an extended period of time, then teams are going to just focus on McDavid. And he can be shut down on any particular night. It doesn't happen that often. But teams have at least figured it out, you know, sparingly. So I think that could affect his overall point total. I think he'll still put up a ton. But I could see a Kucherov or Stamkos winning it if Draisaitl misses like 30 games, mm-hmm. for example.
Fair. Next question is from Kelly Riley. Thoughts on the Minnesota Wild? They've only played 6 games and are missing all top 4 wingers, which is Nino Niederreiter, Charlie Coyle, Michael Granlund, and Zach Parise. Mm-hmm. Yet they still keep themselves in games. And then she just says, also Chris Stewart, which is fair. I mean, Chris Stewart,
sure.
6 goals already. So she's wanting to know, do we trust the Wild right now? Are they going to be able to keep this up? I personally don't think they will. I don't think you can rely on Chris Stewart to keep scoring at this pace. And if these injuries keep weighing them down, or I think if these guys don't get healthy, they will eventually weigh them down.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I would still be worried if I'm a Wild fan right now. When healthy, it's still a very deep team at forward, but I don't know.
Well, again, and we just talked about it with Tampa Bay, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Tampa Bay could not overcome the deluge of injuries last year. They just couldn't. They weren't, you know, they probably didn't play as well as they could have. But I mean, in the end, it was just too much for them. And I think that, you know, I mean, when you're missing so many key players, I mean, people say, you know, everybody deals with injuries. You know, you can't use injuries as an excuse. But I mean, at some point, you do have to use injuries.
Yeah. Sometimes you can.
You actually can use injuries as an excuse. So. Yeah. Like I'm with you, Matt, when they're, I think they're, I don't think they're an elite NHL team. Mm-hmm. I don't think they are. I think they're a second tier team when they're playing as well as they can play. Because I don't think anybody thought that Devan Dubnyk was going to continue to be what he was when he first, you know, when he had that hot streak a couple of years ago. You know, I think they're a good team. I don't think they're a great team. Mm-hmm. And if you take away roughly what half of their top 6, it makes it that much more difficult to be, you know, to stay with the pack.
Yeah. I think they can still contend for a playoff spot. I'm not extremely bullish on them either, but the fact that they're at least surviving right now, I think, is admirable. When you can bring up a kid like Luke Cunning, I think it's a big advantage. And that system they have is pretty beneficial to them, where they've drafted pretty nicely the past couple of years, even when they haven't had super high picks. And, you know, I go back to Joel Eriksson Ek as well as a player where it's like, wow, like, since he was drafted, he's gotten a lot better. And he was pretty good to begin with. So I think that's an advantage they've given themselves. But, yeah, I would agree that they're good, not great.
Yeah, and the farm system, it really is one of the best in the NHL. You also have Jordan Greenway and Kirill Kaprizov, if he ever makes it over from the KHL, who also, they've gotten a lot better since they were drafted. So if I'm a Wild fan and if this season turns out to be a write-off, I wouldn't worry too much because they've got such a loaded system that they're going to have some exciting times in the next couple of years. I think we're out of time. It's been a fun podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And tune in next week. We'll see if every member of the Habs front office still has a job.